We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpis. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping, work too hard, feel overwhelmed. We grieve, we get our hearts broken, we worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And your one-time purchase of the app helps to keep our podcast going. Give it a try. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We love having you with us. Today, I chat with Dawn Eshelman, head of programs at the amazing Rubin Museum of Art in New York City. What's unique about this museum? They've found several ways to introduce and integrate mindfulness and meditation into the museum experience. Their weekly mindfulness meditation programs invite attendees to view a piece of art, discuss it, and then practice a meditation on a particular theme that is also related to the piece of art. It's a beautiful way to enhance the art experience and to cultivate a real-life mindfulness practice. They teach based on themes like listening, compassion, facing your fears, and happiness. This is one of those interviews that really changed the way I think about the museum experience. Now, here's Dawn. Hi, Dawn. Welcome to Untangle. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Rubin Museum? Such an amazing museum.
The Rubin Museum of Art is all about the human experience, and we explore that through the art in our collection, which comes from the Himalayan region. So that's art from Tibet, Nepal, Bhutan, India, Mongolia, and more. And we not only explore the living traditions and cultures that are present in that part of the world, but also some of the overarching concepts and universalities that present themselves through these beautiful artworks. And what I mean by that are things like compassion and facing your fears. So I think that in particular really helps us have that conversation about what it means to be human.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, do you think that your focus on the programs that you create in the museum are because there's such a rich, like, spiritual nature to the art from the Himalayan region?
A lot of the art, again, that's at the heart of our collection does come from spiritual practice. And so it certainly makes sense to talk about it through that framework. And I think that is useful, you know, to folks who want to have a conversation about the big questions, about the meaning of life questions. But also, we learn a lot about the secular experience of being alive too, through these beautiful artworks. So I think, you know, it's accessible to people who are coming from a lot of different perspectives and want to have a lot of different conversations. I think that's the strength of this art, which is really exciting.
I love what you say, you know, when you talk about it being the human experience, and you're developing a lot of these programs to really kind of enrich that. Will you talk about some of the programs that you've got at the museum that support the ongoing art collections?
We offer a really wide variety of programming, some of which you might not expect a Museum of Himalayan Art to offer, but I think what we're often known for is our conversation series. So these are impromptu conversations between usually two people from different backgrounds, talking about things like I mentioned earlier, happiness or transformation or how consciousness and science interact. So Brainwave, which is our spring series of conversations, is all about that. It's all about science and consciousness and where they connect and what that tells us about being alive. In addition to that, it's helpful to know that there's a wide variety of things that we offer beyond conversations too. So we present music concerts from amazing singer-songwriters, jazz musicians that come into our galleries, and we ask them to select an artwork that speaks to them and resonates with themes that they're working with in their own art. So for example, Roseanne Cash did a special concert for us all about the passing down of wisdom from one generation to the next.
Mm.
We've, you know, had musicians who, you know, for whom this concept of lineage, of passing down of wisdom is really important to who they are artistically, right? Because the teaching tradition in jazz in particular is really strong. So really kind of asking artists to create parallels between the art and what they are working with as well. You know, and then there's these kind of larger overarching ideas too, like compassion that or even desire, right? Or ignorance or fear. These things that we all feel that anyone can relate to, that you might not expect Martha Wainwright or your favorite jazz musician to build a concert around, but when they do, it's really interesting new window into who they are as an artist as well. So we present movies, we present meditation, which I know we'll talk about. And then the last program I wanted to mention to you is the Dreamover. And this is a sleepover in our galleries for grownups. We invite participants to fill out a questionnaire in advance, and we ask them three questions. Why are they participating? What have been the three most important events in their life? And what color do they most strongly resonate with? And then based on their answers to those questions, we pair them with an artwork in our galleries, and they sleep and dream under that artwork. And it's kind of like a blind date with a work of art.
That is so cool. I'm just curious, some of the is there any consistency among the best events in people's lives? Are they more like about milestones, or are they just, what kinds of things are you hearing from people?
Oh, I'm so glad that we asked this question, you know, because
right.
Part of, we could have not, right? We could have just not known anything about the people that are walking in our doors. But part of our mission is to help create and enhance personal connections that people have with an art object. So you have to know who people are in order to do that. And you have to invite them to bring that self, their whole selves, into the museum experience. So So people share all kinds of beautiful and difficult things with us about life and death and, you know, losing someone or finding someone. They talk about important travel and trips that they've taken. They talk about an important spiritual experience that they've had. Sometimes learning and studying and you know, an important teacher in their lives. Mm. So it's really amazing how much people share and how much trust really they give us.
Yeah. I mean, what an amazing thing for a museum to be doing. It's almost like you're like a living museum.
I hope so. And I think what people bring to their experience is a really big part of what makes the Rubin Museum work.
Yeah, it's such a special place. And it's just so beautiful that you create conversations and music and cinema. It's like you really work with multiple platforms to support the overall vision and mission of the museum. Because you're so focused on the human experience and all the different elements of it, how did that inspire your mindfulness meditation program?
It's a weekly program. It's Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. It's meant to fit into a lunch hour. It's about 45 minutes long. We do also podcast it. It's available for free on our website. And the idea with this was that we wanted to offer program for the meditation practitioner. Interestingly, we hadn't really been doing that. We had been really kind of distinguishing ourselves as an art museum. And we're in New York City. There are a lot of Dharma offerings, and you know, that was different from our unique offering. So when we wanted to branch out and create programs for practitioners, we knew that it really needed to be, again, focused on this unique offering that we have, which is this beautiful artwork. And the artwork, especially that's in our collection, is so detailed and so coded, right? There's a lot of symbolism to unpack. And when you do it, it just blossoms in front of you, especially if you're new to this type of art. So kind of riffing off of the Dreamover and this idea of getting people to really spend a long time with one piece of art through this personal connection, mindfulness meditation tried to offer that and explore that in a different way. So for each month, with our teachers, we select a different theme to explore. So, you know, this month we're exploring the theme of listening. And we're doing that because of an exhibition we have going on right now, which is really exciting. It's called The World is Sound. And it's all about the power of sound. So we are exploring that idea through our meditation practice this month and really asking the question, how do we listen? What is important about listening, and what does it mean in our lives today when we truly listen? So we work with a family, really, of teachers, including the wonderful Sharon Salzberg, who you just talked with. And together, in partnership with them, we select an object from our collection for each week. So recently we had this beautiful statue of Milarepa, who is a kind of colorful character in the Tibetan lexicon. And he's also a troubadour. He is a singer. In that tradition, singers are pictured often with their hand to their ear, their hand cupping their ear in this kind of listening pose, which I think is so interesting because they're singers. They're not pictured singing, they're pictured listening. So as people entered our meditation session last week, they entered a kind of an intimate cherry wood lined theater space, auditorium. They saw images of Milarepa on this wall ahead of them, including some detail. And they're invited to sit and just take in the imagery. Then I welcome folks and I talk to them a little bit about the image that we're looking at. So we take a look at the lotus throne that he sits upon. We talk about that gesture of the hand to the ear and the significance of that. And then our teacher comes up onto the stage and gives us a 10-minute talk about that idea of listening. And again, we talk about what it means to truly listen in this day and age when listening is so important around us. We talk about what listening means in our meditation practice, what it means to listen truly to ourselves with compassion. We then practice together. And after that, the audience is invited to take a gallery tour with a docent up to the art object that we have just been looking at and meditating upon. But I think it's this idea of really looking deeply at a work of art and talking about that element, that kind of core concept that we can all relate to, in this case, listening. And really, I don't think that you will see that image, that statue of Milarepa, really in the same way ever again once you do that, because you've really made it about yourself. You've really taken that in, that idea in, and in the meantime, learned about this new, perhaps new to you, figure and a little bit more about Himalayan art.
Yeah, we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
It sounds like you're really focused on helping people cultivate a personal connection with the art, but also to learn about a really important part of mindfulness, or just sort of overall back to that concept of the human experience. What are some of the important things to us as human beings? What are some of the other themes that you have included in your sessions?
We have so many things. We have explored the idea of generosity and offering. We've also, because we meet once a week and we are really a community, we talk about what's going on in the world around us. And when times are challenging, we acknowledge that and bring that into the room. So, we don't just meditate to escape from what's going on, but really to engage more mindfully with the world around us. So fear, mm-hmm. It has been a theme we've explored, even around just kind of holidays or things like Thanksgiving, talking about being with family and the joys and challenges of that.
Yeah.
And how our meditation practice can help support us in these kind of cycles of the year and cycles of life. I can give you one more beautiful example of an art object. So, and a theme. We were working, I think, with the idea of compassion. And this was a session with Sharon Salzberg. She selected the object of green Tara to work with. And she likened it to kind of a personal icon for herself, which is the Statue of Liberty. And for her, she described the Statue of Liberty being this beacon of welcome, and how that was important to her right now in her life, but it has been throughout her life, that when she saw it, she would always just be so moved by this statue welcoming people home. And this idea of compassion, of welcoming and home, was really important. And then she invited people to think about a figure in their own lives that meant something to them in that way. And then really connected it to Green Tara, who we were looking at this whole time, this gorgeous bejeweled statue of Green Tara with her foot angled out so that she can jump out and help you at any given moment. So making that connection again to really asking the question, well, okay, this is what Green Tara means. And she about compassion and helping and reaching out. Who in my life does that for me? And how do I see that in the world around me? So I think that's another great example of just really making that personal connection and having the art come alive in a different way.
I think is green Tara a symbol of compassion, similar to the Statue of Liberty?
Yes.
That's so cool.
Yes, thanks for elucidating that. Green Tara is a symbol of compassion, and she's known as the female Buddha. And as a practitioner of Tibetan Buddhism, you call upon her to help you in your time of need. She helps you face your fears.
I'm so happy to know that. I need her. I need her very much.
We all.
Yeah. What are some of the reactions that you're having from people? I'm curious and just overwhelmed in a really positive way that there are programs like this that are going on that can really engage people, support people, and that connect with art in such a prolific way. I'm so curious what kinds of reactions you get from the people that show up from week to week.
We were just really moved by how much this really resonated for people. And I think that not only was it something that our community had wanted, but I think it's something that people didn't know they wanted. And then they realized it was something that was really unique and really special. So our theater, which seats 150 people, is sold out on a weekly basis in advance. We have a standby list, and we work really hard to get as many people in the door as we can. But it's definitely something that has really spoken to people. And every week, I am so just thankful to say that people come up to me and share stories like the one I heard last week, which was that I brought my daughter in the other day. She's having a really hard time, and this, I think, has been an opening for her in her life. And that's the power of meditation. It's just, it offers that for people. But I think there's something special about the art.
That sort of deep connection with the art experience, and also that you are gathering people together in a sangha of sorts. Like, even though it may not be your intention to create community, you're creating community, which I think is such a beautiful thing.
And it's definitely an intention.
I love that.
There are museums around the country that are starting to do this. And you don't have to be a museum of Himalayan art to experience. And you don't even have to be a museum, right? So I know of botanical gardens and just cultural centers that are offering this kind of synergy between the environment that they are kind of creating, that is their product in a way, and this experience of meditation. So, you know, it's definitely a trend that's out there, and I'm excited about that. I think it's a great offering. Yeah. I also think that there are a lot of opportunities for people to approach a meditative practice in this way, no matter where they're coming from in their kind of spiritual or wellness path, right? So we work really hard to make sure that what we're offering is accessible to people who are only interested in a secular experience, and also at the same time in the same room to highly seasoned Buddhist practitioners. So I think that the kind of the gathering place in this conversation is the art in that way. And meditation is the practice around that can be shared, you know, by people with a variety of backgrounds.
Yeah. Wow. Such a brilliant program. You hear a lot about museums, you know, adding ways to engage people, but that include more technology and social media versus meditation and mindfulness programs. What do you think about that? And do you think that that's sort of counterproductive to really connecting with the art itself? What's your thought on that?
I think as many portals of access that can be created, the better. And I think that, you know, it depends on the person. For some people, technologies like social media are not supporting them in a way that helps them feel more connected. And so that's fine. They don't have to use that. I think the fact that we're talking on a podcast right now is a great example of how technology can increase that access, can increase just the, those different points of entry for people. I think that, I think there's nothing wrong with wanting to come into a museum and just simply quietly look at some art by yourself and not engage. And I think it's about the having options, and as a, you know, as a museum, providing options for as many different audience members, visitor types as you can imagine.
Yeah. Our job. Talk a little bit more about the Dreamover Sleepover experience itself, because, you know, my next question was going to be about artists kind of building environments that are meant to help viewers experience like deep serenity or contemplation around a piece of art. And I'm wondering how, if that is part of the Dreamover Sleepover experience.
Well, you know, I think these spaces already exist, right? And it's just a matter of framing them and acknowledging them. So at the Dreamover, we really don't do anything different to the space, right? It's the same museum that you would come into on a Monday morning when things are a little bit quiet, except for maybe the school groups running around. And also, it's the same space that on Friday night is buzzing with music and, you know, social activity until midnight. But I think that, you know, what we're doing is just kind of pointing to it and creating a circumstance where people who want to have this opportunity to do this experiment with us in a way, get to be quiet and focus and spend a long time getting to know a work of art in a way that is very personal for them, or can be if they want it to be. It's just a framing device. So that's what mindfulness is all about, right? It's about looking at the world around us and, you know, riding the subway or driving in traffic and remembering that this is a precious moment, just like all the others. And that, you know, we just make it that by changing our attention, by putting our attention on it in a different way. One of the questions that I remembered we would talk about today was about this idea of what makes museum spaces different and how museums might be kind of poised to uniquely to offer this kind of experience. And really, again, I think that a lot of spaces can offer this experience, but museums, I think, are different in the way that they are kind of what's known in the museum education field as a third place. So it's not home, it's not work or school, but it's this other place. It's another space that you can go to kind of really get outside the everyday. And, you know, museums, while they can be raucous and fun spaces, and I think of them that way too, they can also be quiet spaces. They can be places that ask you to look really deeply at the world around you. And sometimes what happens in response to that is you get to get kind of a better view of yourself too. You get to look more deeply within. And I think that is part of the power of museums.
Yeah, I love the way you put that. And I got an image of going into, like, for example, the Museum of Modern Art when it has a new exhibition and you go there and it's packed with people. And I never really enjoy it because I feel like I'm in a herd of cows or something walking. And, you know, I'm like, check, I got through the exhibit. Versus, like, I can't even imagine the different experience one would have if you could just, like, sit in front of a piece of art and really just contemplate it and maybe have a discussion about it and then contemplate it again. You know, what a different experience those two experiences are.
Yeah, we call that museum fatigue.
Yes. Would you ever go to a museum and just look at one piece of art for an hour and let that be your entire experience?
I would call that slow looking. And that's another term that's out there floating around in the museum world. And there are, in fact, slow art days that happen sometimes throughout the year, throughout different museums, you know, and where we really focus on that type of looking. But I think it's a great challenge, and what you're suggesting, and something that you can do anywhere. But I think the Rubin offers a really intimate environment that, sure, sometimes can be busy and loud, but often is intimate, and it's really just going down and being aware. I was going to say something else about this slow looking. Oh, just that it's a great opportunity for, you know, also like being a member of a museum, because you can just pick a museum that's close to you. Hopefully you have one nearby, and just as an experiment, become a member and go once a week and just look at one artwork, you know, for 5 minutes even, and see how that changes you.
Yeah. I love these interviews when I personally learn something new, and I want to like sort of rush out and have this experience of what you're calling slow art, because I think I would really enjoy that. And I've never really thought about that, doing that in an art museum before. So I thank you so much for that. I am so grateful for the work that you're doing at the Rubin Museum and for all of your amazing programs. And I thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity to share and to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Dawn for spending time with us today. For more on her programs at the Rubin Museum, go to rubinmuseum.org. And if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play. We'll see you next time.